Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The Capitalist Era, The Making and Unmaking of the Global Mind by Jeremy Adelman, is a forthcoming work of global economic and intellectual history from Princeton University Press. Adelman, a historian known for work on Latin America, world history, and global interdependence, examines capitalism not simply as an economic system, but as a historical force that reshaped how distant societies came to depend on one another. The book is positioned within debates about globalization, political economy, empire, and the crisis of trust in an interconnected world. Its central concern is how capitalism helped create a global mind, a way of imagining the world as a network of strangers linked by trade, labor, credit, consumption, and risk, and how that mindset has been strained or undone by violence, inequality, nationalism, and environmental pressure. Rather than offering a narrow market history, the book appears to synthesize economic, political, social, and intellectual history to explain capitalism as both a connector and a destabilizer. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, capitalism is a long global process rather than a European invention. A central premise of the capitalist era is that capitalism should be understood through a long and geographically broad history, not through a simple origin story centered only on medieval or early modern Europe. Adelman places capitalist practices within wider networks of trade, finance, credit, and exchange that linked regions across the Indian Ocean, the Mediterranean, the Atlantic, and other commercial zones before industrial capitalism became dominant. This approach matters because it separates the history of capitalists from the later consolidation of capitalism as a world-making system. Merchants, moneylenders, and commercial partnerships existed in many places, but the historical question is how these practices gained the power to reorganize states, labor, empire, and everyday life. By widening the frame, the book resists accounts that treat capitalism as the natural result of European ingenuity alone. It instead presents capitalism as a cumulative, uneven, and conflict-filled process in which different regions supplied techniques, commodities, labor systems, and political experiments. The reasoning behind this perspective is that capitalism became global, not because one society invented markets, but because commercial practices became tied to coercive power, territorial expansion, and increasingly dense forms of interdependence among distant peoples. Secondly, interdependence among strangers is the core problem of the modern world. The book gives special attention to the problem of dependence among strangers. Modern capitalism joined people who did not know one another, and often did not trust one another, yet whose lives became linked through food, energy, finance, migration, manufacturing, and debt. This is more than a description of trade. It is an inquiry into how societies came to imagine distant others as necessary, threatening, exploitable, or morally connected. Adelman connects this issue to older debates in political economy, including the question of whether commerce softens relations among peoples or intensifies opportunism and domination. The practical importance of this theme is that many current crises cannot be understood within national boundaries alone. Inflation, supply chains, climate shocks, wars, and financial instability show that attempts to retreat from globalization do not erase material dependence. At the same time, interdependence without trust can produce fear, resentment, and political backlash. The book, therefore, treats the global mind as a historical achievement and a fragile one. Capitalism made distant lives mutually consequential, but it did not provide stable ethical or political foundations for managing that dependence fairly. Thirdly, the alliance between capital, states, and empire, Adelman treats capitalism as inseparable from state power and imperial expansion. Capital did not become world-transforming solely through private exchange. It gained force when rulers, militaries, chartered companies, creditors, and merchants found ways to support one another. States needed money to fight wars, build navies, occupy territory, and administer expanding domains. Capitalists needed protection, legal recognition, infrastructure, and access to land, labor, and markets. This reciprocal relationship helped turn commercial networks into imperial systems. The significance of this argument is that it challenges a clean distinction between free markets and coercive politics. Capitalist expansion often relied on laws, taxation, military force, enclosure, colonial rule, and the policing of property. This does not mean that every market exchange was violent, but it does mean that capitalism as a historical system cannot be explained by voluntary exchange alone. The book appears to emphasize that the making of a capitalist world involved institutions capable of enforcing contracts and securing investment, but also institutions that dispossessed communities and subordinated labor. This state-capital relationship is crucial for understanding why capitalism generated both unprecedented wealth and recurrent forms of domination. Fourthly, labor commodification. dispossession, and the violence behind wealth creation. A major theme associated with the book is the transformation of labor into a commodity and the violence embedded in that transformation. Capitalist growth depended not only on exchange, but on separating people from independent access to land, tools, subsistence, or communal resources, thereby making wage labor, forced labor, or market dependence more central to survival. This process took different forms across regions, including enclosure, plantation slavery, colonial extraction, industrial discipline, and the destruction or marginalization of non-capitalist economies. The reasoning is that capitalism expanded by creating new freedoms for capital, while often narrowing the practical freedoms of workers, peasants, enslaved people, and indigenous communities. Adelman's approach appears to hold together two realities that are sometimes treated separately. Capitalism produced immense increases in output, wealth, and technological capacity, but it also generated coercion, displacement, ecological strain, and social hierarchy. This dual focus prevents a purely celebratory account of markets, and also avoids reducing capitalism to violence alone. The book's contribution lies in showing that wealth creation and dispossession were historically intertwined, not accidental side effects that can be ignored when assessing the capitalist era. Lastly, the unmaking of the global mind amid globalization crisis. The second half of the book's title points toward the weakening of the assumptions that once supported global integration. Adelman appears especially interested in how late 20th and early 21st century debates over globalization revealed a growing gap between material interdependence and political confidence. Since the 1970s, economic integration has intensified through finance, trade, communication, migration, and supply chains, but public trust in the benefits of that integration has become more unstable. Deindustrialization, inequality, debt crises, climate change, pandemics, and geopolitical rivalry have made many societies skeptical of promises that global capitalism would produce shared prosperity. The unmaking of the global mind does not mean that the world is no longer connected. Rather, it suggests that the intellectual and moral frameworks used to justify interdependence have frayed. People remain dependent on distant strangers, but those relationships are increasingly imagined through fear, competition, resentment, or vulnerability. This theme gives the book contemporary relevance without turning it into a policy manual. Its historical value lies in showing that the present crisis of globalization is not a sudden rupture but part of a longer argument over how to live with dependence across distance. In conclusion, the capitalist era is best suited for readers interested in global history, capitalism studies, political economy, economic history, and the historical roots of globalization. It will be especially useful for students, scholars, and serious general readers who want to understand capitalism as a world-making force rather than only as a system of markets or firms. And ain't you way, its intellectual benefit lies in connecting large historical structures with a concrete modern problem. People across the world rely on one another more deeply than ever, while trust in that reliance is increasingly fragile. Readers should expect synthesis and interpretation rather than a simple practical program for reform. Compared with many books on capitalism, Adelman's work stands out for its emphasis on the global mind, meaning the ways capitalism shaped imagination, dependence, fear, and obligation across distance. It also appears to distinguish itself by refusing a single-sided account. Capitalism is treated as productive and destructive, integrative and coercive, materially expansive, and politically destabilizing. That balance makes the book relevant to debates about whether globalization is ending, transforming, or revealing older tensions. Its likely value is not that it provides easy answers, but that it gives readers a historically grounded vocabulary for understanding why capitalist interdependence remains unavoidable and contested. If you would like to support Jeremy Adelman, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.